Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
You've reached the Murder Between Friends podcast with Sherilyn Dale and Gavin Fish. Please stay on the line. This week's episode starts in 3, 2, 1.
Hi, G-Money.
Hey, Sherilyn. Welcome back to North America, I guess. Well, did you leave North America? Where did you go?
Yeah, I went to Jamaica.
Nice.
Mm-hmm. Have you been?
Nope. I've never spent any time in the Caribbean.
That was our first time.
I've been all over the world. The only continent I haven't spent any time on is Antarctica. But I've not spent any time in the Caribbean. It's pretty sad.
Yeah, the beach was absolutely beautiful. Woe is me. Been everywhere but the Caribbean. The beach was really beautiful, so I definitely would put it on the bucket list.
Yeah, I have this dream of... I did all my traveling for business, and so I went all over the place, but I did it alone. And Kimberly doesn't really care to travel. She traveled a lot with her family growing up. She didn't really care. And it's been cool that a few times I've taken like our children with me, and that's pretty cool. But I'd really love to go with Kimberly. And we never have done any trips abroad together.
Oh, yeah, someday. You guys got it. Does she like warm weather? Would she do a Caribbean trip?
Oh, she's a beach girl, for sure.
Oh, then, yeah. Okay.
Growing up in California, for sure. That was one of the main things when we decided to move to the northeast of the United States. She was really afraid of not being close to a beach. And
I can't imagine.
The closest one we really have is the Jersey Shore from where we live. So it's
yes!
It's a long way.
But, have you been to the Jersey Shore?
No, we go back to California to visit while we're down there. We go out to the beach when we're there.
I used to get called Snooki all of the time, and I'd be so offended by it. Okay, thanks, Gavin. I'd be so offended, and then I look back on my photos of that era, and I'm like, wow. I was working at a tanning salon, first of all, so I was addicted, and I was like a dead ringer for Snooki.
That is so funny. Yeah. I didn't really watch the show very much, but Snooki is probably the only character that I have in my brain there. Yeah, I could see that. I mean,
I should have used it more to like my advantage at the bar. When people were like, it's Snooki, I was like, F you. Yeah. Instead, she'd be like, it is me. Let's get some shots going. Save me some money.
Well, listen, while you were gallivanting around the world and sunning yourself on the beach, I was doing some of the most disgusting work I've ever done.
I know you have. I can't wait to hear about everything. Let's go.
Well, I have to tell you a story. I'm not going to give you tons of detail because of privacy for the person involved.
Okay.
But I have to tell you the story.
Okay.
So I was interviewing our county coroner for a article that I'm writing about her. She's terrific. In the United States, coroners are elected positions. You're not a doctor typically. You're just an elected person who says, I'm willing to do the dirtiest job in the world and get paid nothing for it. So that's what coroners really are. But this woman is amazing. She did, all of her college work was done in forensics and anthropology. Like, she's awesome. So anyway, I'm
the real deal. She knows her stuff.
Yeah, she is amazing. So we're like in a coffee shop in town and I'm interviewing her, jotting down notes and everything. And I'd been trying to interview her for months, but every time we had something set, she had to go off to a death scene. Right. So we're sitting there. She gets a call. It's a death. She's being called by police over to this scene. And she goes, "You want to come?" Like, yeah, I really do. So I followed her over to a town nearby, pull up at this apartment building. The police are out there, chief of police in this little town, everything. And she's like, "Come with me." Police wouldn't go in. What had happened is there was a welfare check. They opened the door and they're like, "Call the coroner. We're not walking in here."
Wow. So they hadn't even gone.
Yeah. They weren't going in. So Christine's like, "Follow me." And I was just like, "Be tough, Gavin. Be tough. Go for it." Opened up the door and in we walked. And there had been, I won't share details, but the decedent had been there for a long time.
Oh my gosh, Gavin.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, how sweet. Like, if anyone was going to carry me out, I'd want it to be you. You're so respectful, you know?
He was gross.
You know, he was in good hands. I can only imagine. And had you ever seen something
other
like
than
that?
Funerals, you know, like post, like funeral homework. No.
Right.
I was there when my grandmother died. And I was there when Kimberly's grandfather died.
But nothing like that. I mean, like a stranger or.
And she was amazing. Like the smell was enough to drive away
the toughest cops,
right?
I was just about to
ask. And we stayed in that room for probably half an hour while she was investigating his identification, his location. Were there any drug paraphernalia? Didn't even bother. Flies around us, landing on us like that. And didn't even bother. She made the phone call to the next of kin in the room. Never left.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Wow.
And she was sweet. Like, it was amazing. That was the very first experience I've ever had with a coroner where their duty is to, okay, I need to find out who this person is. Do your investigation. Right. Okay.
Right.
Found medication. I need to find out who next of kin is. Let's call the doctor. Call up to the doctor. Explain what's going on. Do you have a next of kin on file? Find the next of kin. Make the phone call and break the news. "I'm very sorry. I am the county coroner. I'm standing in the living room of," you know, one of those things.
Oh my gosh. No kidding. That changes you.
Yeah, we don't give coroners nearly enough. It's like you know how teachers aren't paid enough? They couldn't be paid enough, right?
Yes.
After that one experience, I think coroners can't be paid enough.
Wow.
And they're not paying anything.
Really? I didn't know that. That's news to me.
It's not volunteer. They're paid.
Yeah.
But,
right. No, no, no. I know. But like little.
Much.
My assumption would have been that it would be a well-paying job because, like you said, I mean, like, who wants to do that job? That's really, really has to take a toll on somebody.
Yeah. I mean, I came home and had to decompress, you know. That was tough. I was there when the next of kin arrived. She was the most amazing.
Oh.
Like, can't let you into the scene, but what can I get for you? Right? And she'd go back in. She got a couple things. You know, it was, you know, kind of explain the process. Okay, we've transported him to this funeral home. Do you know where the funeral home is? No. Okay. Well, follow me. Take you over there.
Oh my gosh. Bless.
Yeah. Yeah. It was amazing.
I love her. don't even know her.
Yeah,
have to have her on. We have to have her on.
Yeah, you know the problem.
I'm gonna talk to her.
A couple things.
The problem is people have passed away and she's got to be there.
That's number one. She's like, I looked at the publication that I work for, that I write for, and there were 1,700 deaths in our county in 2022. And of course, she wouldn't go to all those that happen in hospitals, or they'd be elderly or under, you know, palliative care or something like that, right? But that averages almost 5 deaths a day. So she's going to death scenes all the time. So that's number one. Number two it's not surprising that a person who decides to be a coroner just really doesn't want to talk about it to anybody.
Hey, that's true. You know? That's true. Well, maybe we could get some tips on how to decompress, how to you know, after the day. Oh gosh, I don't know. I don't know how you don't take that with you, but
Cheryl, she was phenomenal. Amazing. Just absolutely
amazing.
She sounds
amazing.
It was a terrific experience.
So, like you said, what did you say? I'm gallivanting around the world. So you've done some coroner training. What else have you done? Because you've also been up to something else that I really want to know about.
Well,
Forensics now. You're doing ballistics training.
Oh, I'm totally amateur on this, but here's the deal.
I know.
On the YouTube channel, I don't like to just talk about cases. Like there's value in that, but I don't like to just tell stories. I do tell stories, but I don't like to just tell stories, right?
Now,
on this case that I'm looking into, the victim's name is Sarah Easton. She was a friend of my little sister's. And I believe, in my opinion, she was murdered, and the likely suspect is her husband, who was the chief of police. Anyway, I got my hands on some documents, and I found out that there was, on the autopsy, it said that there was stippling but no soot. So I had to find out what stippling is. And then basically what that is burn marks from the gunpowder that isn't quite burnt yet, coming out of the gun, landing on the skin and burning the skin. So I was like, the medical examiner didn't know what distance the gun was from her when it was shot. But what he said was there was no soot. So it was far enough away that no soot landed on her, but close enough that unburnt gunpowder landed on her. I thought,
okay. And can you walk us through, the soot though, like, so I'm stuck on the soot for 1 second and then we can move forward because my brain's going to just be stuck there. So when you shoot the gun, the bullet comes, and then what, if it was really close, you would get the soot, but when it, like, does it fall out immediately when it comes out?
Yeah. So when a bullet primer explodes, All of that gunpowder starts to burn and it expands. That is what causes the force of the projectile to go down the barrel. But it's not, the projectile isn't the only thing that goes down the barrel. It's all of those expanding gases. And usually they come out first and then the bullet and then more of those expanding gases, right? So the gunpowder burns at different rates. And so some of it, by the time it's just an inch or less, actually much less, by the time it gets to the end of the barrel, it's already burnt and it's fine particulates. It's like really, you know, I don't know how many people would have this experience, but if you touch like the inside of the chimney on your fireplace or the flue or something like that, there's that black sooty, I can't remember what they call it, creosote or something. It's like that. It's really, really fine particulates. And because they're so fine, they don't go very far. They just go a few inches. But then there are pieces of the gunpowder that are still burning or have not burned yet. They're hot, but they're still like little like beads, right? And so they have more weight behind them, so they go farther. So the soot might make it, well, what I found with this particular gun is that the soot is gone by 8 inches.
Okay.
But the stippling lasts all the way out to like 24 inches.
Wow. That's huge, Gavin.
Yeah. So the doctor in the autopsy report said it wasn't a contact wound. And I thought, well, how do you know it's not a contact wound? So this is what I did. At first, I was like, let me get paper targets because white paper would show soot and they would show stippling, I guess, right? But then I thought, but would it? I mean, it's just paper thin, right? And will it burn the way skin does? You know, like our skin is moist, right? And it's delicate. Yes. So I needed skin. And I...
this was my favorite text I've ever received in my life, actually.
Well, I went to like Amazon, like, can I buy skin? Right? And there is synthetic skin that like tattoo artists will practice on.
Yeah,
you can buy squares of that.
Yeah, I used to be an eyebrow tattooer. I used to practice on, and it's not skin, it's rubber.
Well, I was gonna ask though. I mean, doesn't feel like skin? It doesn't. It's
like latexy. It's silicone-y. It's not the same texture as all. So I'm glad you didn't order it.
Where did you go next? It was expensive. It was expensive.
I know it's so expensive.
You know? So okay.
It's so expensive.
So I live in rural PA and I'm like, it's the end of hunting season. I know that there are skins all over the place, but then I remembered that I watched an episode, like many episodes of Mythbusters. Do you remember Mythbusters?
Oh, yes, I miss Mythbusters.
Yeah, but they would use pig carcasses in a lot of their stuff where they needed a facsimile of people. I was like, right? I wonder if I can get pig skins. Within like 3 calls, I was on the line with somebody that's like, yeah, I got a whole bunch of them. We usually throw them away. Come on out.
How did the call go?
I was like, hey, so my name's Gavin. I'm a YouTuber and I want to do a forensic test. She's like, what does that even mean? I said, I need to shoot skin that is like human skin. And for Mythbusters, I think the pig skin would do it. Do you have pig skin? And she full on was like, it was a Wednesday. She's like, well, Wednesday's slaughter day. And so we will have a lot of them. Normally we just throw them away. I'll have one of my guys set one aside. So, oh, I mean, that was it. The phone call was like 3 minutes long. So I hopped
in
my car.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Hopped in my car and drove on down and... It was like a half hour drive, 20 minute drive, something like that. And this kid comes out with like his hard hat and apron.
He's adorable.
Like
I saw him on the video.
Yeah. And he's just like, holding a pigskin.
You can see what's going on in his head. Like, what the F did I sign up for today? Oh. I'm just shoving this pigskin in this garbage bag for this guy.
I had to ask for that bag because I showed up on my SUV. And he just brought out this skin, like holding it by the ears. And, like, here you go. He was like ready to hand it to me. And I was like, do you have a bag? So he just dropped it on the pavement and was like, I'll be right back. And he went inside, came back out with a garbage bag and then stuffed it in the bag for me.
Gosh, I would hate to see him just stand there trying to hand it off to you. That's even better.
Oh, I was dying. He was a cool kid too. He was a cool kid.
Oh, he looked adorable. He looked adorable.
But this, I mean, there are people that are grossed out by this. I am grossed out by this, but it is the reality. We are a meat eating society. It is the reality that the way it goes. So, anyway, Sherilyn, I bring the pigskin home. It's cold outside. I'm not going to bring it inside, but I can keep it in my garage. You know, it was like negative 10. So I kept it in my garage and then I waited for my wife to be gone. Because I was like, I'm not going to stand out in that weather cutting out this pig. I like prepared my kitchen, and then two of our daughters.
I had questions about the kitchen and where Kimberly was.
Yeah, she was gone. She was not in the house. Okay. She's like, so, and then when she, while she was gone, we did it. It took us like an hour. And I can describe that later. But when she came back, oh man, I had scrubbed the kitchen clean. It just smelled like bleach in there. I scrubbed it. And she came home. She's like, hey, thanks for cleaning the kitchen. That looks great. How did it go outside with the pig? And I was like, outside? No, I did it inside. And here's the grossest part. Kimberly cuts our boy's hair. I called up Mac McCollum, or I texted her on Twitter, and I was like, do you think I should like shave the hair? And she's like, yeah, I think you should shave the hair. Maybe half of it, half not. Cause it'd be interesting to see what would happen to the hair. Like, well, how does one shave pig hair? Well, I've got my wife's clippers, her hair cutting clippers.
Gavin.
I full on did. I used her hair cutting clippers and shaved. So what I did is I took this giant pigskin. That animal had to be huge. It was huge.
Oh, I know. That thing took up your whole counter.
Oh, yeah. It was giant. And I cut it up into like squares. And then the squares, some of them, like half of them, I shaved with those clippers.
I was going to text you, and then I was like, no, I'll wait to talk about it. But that, you know, the time lapse of that, it was really satisfying to watch the shaving part. I loved that. It was really relaxing. I was like, look at him just out there shaving the pig on his kitchen gown.
Oh, well, we couldn't do it with sound because it just was grossing me out. And our older daughter in that video that was helping me, her name's Josie. She is 18 years old. She is pre-vet. She's studying animal science. Oh. She has no problem with any of this. Terrific.
That was awesome. Yeah.
But then our little seven-year-old, she was tough too. She's rolling up her sleeves. And
she was. She was getting it. I was watching her facial expressions be like, okay, how's this going for you? How's your mental state? She was good.
She's tough. The other thing we did is we waited until we did it during swim practice for our youngest son, because he is a sensitive little boy, aww, cutest little sweetest little boy. So we waited for swim and then did it while he was at practice. And then when he came home, Caroline first thing told him what had happened. He's like, oh, I want to see that. And so I was like, buddy, I'll show it to you, but are you sure you want to see that? And I kind of described it. He's like, is there blood? Yeah, there's a little blood. He goes, I don't do gore.
Oh my gosh. I mean, good for him. You know, he wasn't like, I'm going to suck this up because my sister's already saw it. He was just like, no, you know what? I know my limits. This is my limit.
He knows who he is. Yeah. He knows what he's about.
So, that's awesome. Yeah. Okay. So then you took them out. I want to know about the gun range. How did that all get set up?
Yeah. So, I've got a friend. I wanted to use the same gun that was used in this crime. It's called a Glock 26, and it's like I think they call them subcompact guns. They're really small. They're designed to be concealed. And the gun in the crime belonged to Aaron Easton. It's a small gun. It's tiny. I think Aaron Easton, who was my suspect in this one, it was described as his service weapon, but it's not a big gun that he would keep on his hip as a cop. It'd be something like he'd keep maybe hidden in his pant leg, or maybe it's like his off-duty weapon that he would keep concealed.
Right.
And it's really small. So I tried to find that gun just reaching out to friends of mine, and I couldn't find it. But a friend of mine, Shannon, she said she had a Glock 43, which is the modern equivalent. It's almost the same gun. It's like, it holds fewer rounds in the magazine. It has a barrel that's like half a millimeter shorter. Other than that, it's the same.
Okay.
Everything. Okay. So I took that gun and then I have a, I borrowed that gun. I didn't take it. I borrowed that gun from Shannon. And then we have other friends, Kitty and Doug, who they belong to a shooting club. So on a rainy day that nobody was going to be out there anyway, I met them out at their club, out at the pistol range, and we were alone on the entire property. And we took these pigskins and we shot them from different distances, starting at a contact shot, moving out to like half an inch, then 2 inches, 4, 6, 8, 12. And I think I jumped from there to 24, 32.
Wow.
And we shot them. Josie and I shot them.
Oh, okay. Then, I love that. I was going to ask if Josie came along.
Yeah, she did. She wanted to come, and that was the first time she'd ever handled a gun. So we got an opportunity to do some gun safety with her. My brother-in-law came out with us. He brought a fun, I think it's called a single action army. It's a old 1800s, like cowboy revolver.
Oh, cool.
And, you know, so she got to play with it, but she got to shoot that. And then
yes. Yeah.
She shot the little Glock, and then she shot my gun. While we were out there, we decided to have a little bit of fun, but yeah, so we shot them, we put them in labeled bags, and then we brought them back to our house where under a macro lens with a camera, we took a close look to see what we could see. And
wow. And I mean, without spoiling your episode and stuff like that, now, do you have, had photos to compare, like autopsy photos? Did you have that?
No.
Or just the report? Okay. So we don't know what the wounds actually look like, but based off the report, you did measurements and stuff like that.
Yeah, the report described it that the stippling pattern was like 2 3/4 inches by 2.5 inches. And the soot was present. It also described the direction of the trajectory of the gun or of the bullet. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And so one of the things that I wish I would have done is I put these targets on a flat target, you know, like I hung them up so that they were flat and I shot them. But what I wish I would have done is somehow had some sort of like, what do you call that? Convex, like something to put it on it. So it'd be more like a facsimile of a head because.
Okay. Yeah. Almost like a mannequin or something like that. Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah.
Something with a, maybe even a hard backer, right? So right. It'd be like a skull because the bullets are going to behave differently going into a human, you know, head. Than just a piece of skin draped over a piece of cardboard, right? I was shooting with the same ammunition with almost the same gun, but it wasn't really all that scientific because there's so many other variables that I didn't take into consideration. So I could redo this.
Right. And I was just going to say, are we going to redo this?
I don't know, but I've got a friend who's a CSI, and I asked him about it, and he told me that there are products that he could get for me where he could. Like we could create a facsimile again with pigskin of a human skull, then we could fire at the right trajectory and all that stuff. But
wow,
I wish I would have thought of those things, but as an amateur, I thought I did.
Well, of course. I mean, you did pretty good as an amateur, Gavin. I mean, that was, I was, first of all, like I said, that the first text that you sent me, I was like, Brent and I were sitting beside each other. I think we were eating or I don't know what we were doing. Oh, no. We're in the kitchen and I look at him. I go, oh, look what Gavin's doing right now. It's like, what is that?
I sent you the video.
That's a pigskin. And we've talked about this, like our spouses don't have anything really to do with the lifestyle that we look into. Like Brent has no interest in watching true crime or hearing stories or like experiments like that. So he's like, you guys are just, he's like, I don't have the words right now. And I'm just like, okay, anyways, back to what I was doing. I was like, this is going to be interesting to see what he gets up to here. But yeah, it was really cute. We were just beside each other. And I'm like, oh, that's just a big slab of pigskin.
Yeah, it was gross. It smelled gross. It felt gross. It was gross. It was gross. But I mean, you and I have talked about this before when we were talking about my Penny Doe case, where I had gone up to that the anthropology professor, and he had the remains of that woman that we're still trying to identify. And we talked about how I'm glad that there are people that dedicate their lives to this study, right? That do the ugly, dirty work that nobody else wants to do, like our county coroner. I'm glad that there are people that do that. So there's nothing that I have done that even scratches the surface of the disgustiness that those people have to go through in their careers.
It's cool. Fun. And it gives a new appreciation. Right. And so I love that we got to talk about it, because I think that that's what I like to do on my channel. I know you do too, not have it just be about, you know, the of whatever, but to show what goes behind the scenes and all of these other people that are behind each single case. It's not just the victim, you know, or the families. Like, there are so many people involved in these stories that we tell who are affected and who work really hard and, like you said, don't get the recognition that they need to.
Yeah,
it's really cool to hear about all that.
A lot of times, not only do they not get the recognition, but they're also kind of vilified a little bit. Like, I would imagine a medical examiner job is a tough job, because you're writing an opinion, and almost no matter what you write, somebody is going to disagree, and they're going to be vocal about it. That doesn't mean that I'm going to let medical examiners off the hook if I think they're wrong. I mean, Ellen Greenberg, for example, right? Amanda Winkowski, for example, that I think that they're wrong.
David Elmquist.
David Elmquist,
Teron Evans Jr.
So,
no, and like, but it is important to call those types of things out. But like you said, like, I love when recognition is given when it deserves, because there, like you said, there are a lot of great, great professionals out there, especially when you dumb it down, quote unquote, to the number that you did. Like, that type of stuff that resonates with me. And I know a lot of people, when you're like, okay, there were this many deaths, that means that that's roughly 5 a day, you know, and okay, even if that coroner is going out to 1 a day, you know, or maybe one day they don't have any, but the next day they have 3, you know, that's a lot. That is a lot.
It is a lot, a lot. And even in, like, we live in Podunk, USA. We're in the middle of the woods, man. They call our county a 6th class county in our state, which just, I think there are 8 classes starting at Philadelphia. It's all based on population, but we're 6 out of 8. So we are a very, very rural county. And there are that many. So, yeah, they're working hard.
When you put it into that type of perspective, it's actually fascinating.
Well, and I know a case in our county that I covered in one video briefly. And then after I had done that video, the family reached out to me and I had a meeting with the person who died. I don't think that he was murdered, but the person who died tragically, I spoke with his parents, and his mom brought up, you know, she said something like, I wasn't even brought in to identify my son. How can they even identify him if they don't bring somebody in? And she was stuck on that she wasn't called in to identify her son. And what she didn't understand, she looked at movies and TV shows, like, this is how you identify somebody. A loved one comes in, they pull the sheet back, that is my son, and then you cry into somebody's shoulder. We've all seen thousands of scenes like that, right? But the reality, and speaking with a coroner, is that hardly ever happens. They hardly ever have a family member come in to identify somebody, because there's always a way to identify them. And in the case of this young man, he had tattoos, he had scars, he had an ankle monitor, like a home arrest ankle monitor on him.
There were identities. Okay. And just out of curiosity.
Yeah, she didn't want that poor mother to look at a kid who had been in the river for months. She didn't want her.
Okay, because I was just about to say, like, if she's asking, right? Okay, yeah, that's what I was going to see. Was it gruesome? Was it traumatizing? And yes, yeah. I do know of cases like that where it's like if it's something like that, you know, professionals will do everything in their power that they can to protect the surviving.
Yes.
Loved ones.
You don't want to remember your loved one.
Because they don't want your, yeah. And I know that I've covered quite a few cases where I've heard that, where it's been like the family has been crying, begging, let me see. And it's the police officer or the coroner saying, no, you know, like absolutely not. And not because we don't want you to, it's for you. Like this is, you know, remember them how you want to.
Yeah. I can think of one case where there was an identification of a family member that was Alexis Sharkey, but when she was identified by her husband, she had been dead something like 8 hours, and she looked like she was described as looking like a mannequin, beautiful. She was bathed. She was clean. And so, and there was no identification on her. And so when Tom Sharkey called to say that his wife was missing, they brought him in. Identify her body. Of course, we found out later was likely the one who took her life. Yeah.
Yeah.
But
we're assuming. Yeah.
It doesn't happen that way very often. And the coroner in that case really is taking a lot of flack from the decedent. I was telling you about that, their family, because of her insensitivity to what it is that they needed. But it was exactly her sensitivity to protect them from that view that that caused her to make that decision. So tough job.
Super cool. Tough job. And I think that's super cool to highlight that. I don't know, that I think that's a good lesson of this episode, you know, like, and that, like you said, I think that we both like to kind of stick it to them where we can, because we don't believe in corruption. Really, really gets both of us like fired right up. That's something that we have very much in common. We're like a dog with a bone. Like, I'm not going to stop until you're exposed. This is so wrong. But it's nice because we, you know, we don't get to appreciate the amazing people that do their job really well and honestly and ethically.
Yeah.
So thank you to all of you.
Yeah, you guys rule. You guys are awesome.
You do. Seriously.
Yeah. I think also with medical examiners, that's another thing, man. There are so many deaths. I'm trying to think. I think that in Buffalo, New York, so the one I'm thinking about with Amanda Winkowski, the medical examiner did something like 900 autopsies the year that Amanda died.
Wow. How many is that a day?
Yeah, if you work 5 days a week, right? That's 250 days, work days in a year. So they're doing so many autopsies. And
my gosh.
And I actually, in that case where I think that the medical examiner really screwed up on that case, and she was known to have screwed up, but my dog was peeing behind me. She was stretching everybody. It's okay.
Peppers.
They're funny. I think that she just made an honest mistake, and the corruption came from the cover up of that mistake because she was just so overworked. She then just continued to try to cover. And that was the problem. I think we would understand that if somebody has to do 5 autopsies a day,
right,
you know, for their career, in and day out, we would understand a mistake, right?
Exactly. And that's the problem, right? It's about owning it. And then it's like when you're when you're younger, or not even younger. I mean, I know a lot of adults that do this too, where they get themselves caught up in a little bit of a predicament, and they start by a little lie. And then they're so far into it that there's no way to backpedal. And we've seen it happen so much. And Amanda Winkowski's case, I think, is a huge example of that. It's like, yeah, there's, I'm sure in her mind, there's no going back. Whereas, like you said, if from the get-go, it was explained like that, and everybody, you know, public, we were to understand, you know, like it broken down like that. I'm doing 5 a day, 900 a year, you know, do the math there. I made a human error. People appreciate honesty. Of course, you're going to have a couple people that are like, well, there shouldn't be human error in that profession. And, you know, whatever it is, what it is.
You're trained. You go to school but for.
Yeah. Exactly. Someone's always going to say something, but the majority of the people appreciate honesty and just doing the right freaking thing, making it right.
Yeah. But,
she's shoveled herself so far in.
She did. And then a bunch of other people piled in to try to protect her too, the DA and county attorney and all that. Yeah. Hey, I am curious if you have watched the Casey Anthony documentary series that just came out.
I haven't yet. I think we talked about this. I've really struggled because I've always said it's a case that I'd never cover on my channel. I'm sick of her. This was before that she even had, I knew that she had a documentary, but I said I'm sick of her getting attention still, being in the news, trying to still run this narrative. I've heard a lot about it. I have actually Stephanie's videos on the queue, because Stephanie and I see each other, see things very similarly. Whereas it's like, I think people lead with their emotions a lot. So they see this new documentary and they're like, oh, you know, but listen to how she said this. Listen to how she said this. Where I go back, I went back and I started watching all of her old interrogations. So that's where I'm starting. So I have made the decision. I do want to watch the documentary, even though I was against it, but I'm starting fresh in the case like I was in 2000 and what was it, 2008?
11, I think.
No, 11.
Well, the trial was in 11.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because Kaylee was, she was three? How old is she? Two or three. Her and Haley were the exact same age. And it really affected me because me and Casey are the same age. Our children's name are Kaylee and Haley. I was messed up by this thing. Man. So I followed it. I followed it so closely. And when she was acquitted, I was on the phone with my mom and I was bawling. I was crying for this baby. That case affected me more than any thing that I had seen up until that point. And so, yeah, I remember it being so obvious then. And so when I see a lot of people like, oh, well, just listen. And it's like, I'm going back, man. I'm going back to those interviews. The web that she spun, same thing that we're saying. She dug herself such a hole that there's no, she doesn't want to turn back. And, you know, she's trying to save face and throwing everybody that she can. I mean, her dad, I guess we all can see specifically under the bus, but none of it adds up when you go back to the actual, you know, all the way back then, the words that she was saying in jail on record at the time. That's my tangent on
so it. I didn't follow the case. Like, I know of the case. Okay. I'm vaguely aware of the facts of the case. But in 2011, Kimberly and I were dealing with the ramifications of a giant business failure, and we were trying to dig ourselves out of a real financial hole. We're both working two and three jobs. I just wasn't following it in 2011, and I found on, so instead of going to the documentary, I thought, okay, if I'm gonna maybe educate myself on this case, I'm gonna see if I can find court, you know, trial, because I know it was televised. So there's like 300 hours of the stream from the trial, and it includes testimonies and arguments and clips of interviews and stuff like that. And I think I'm going to go and watch that stuff. I've gotten the entire case file from the court. Like, it's got to be 7,000-8,000 pages. Got
Jeez,
all of that.
I can only imagine.
So it's like reading Anna Karenina.
I love this for us. Hey, I love this for us because this makes me think we can regroup talk about it together when we're both done, because I'm also going back. I watched the trial, but I would like to keep my, I would like to brush up on some of it because it was so long ago, and see things from, you know, a different perspective in terms of like the trial and what was presented, I guess, like as if you were a juror not knowing, right? Because I mean, the outcome was pretty shocking to people who had followed it outside of not knowing about the case, right?
So she was found guilty of something though, right? Because there is a sentencing video. What was she found guilty of? I mean, she was acquitted of the murder.
If anything, I don't know. Nothing's coming to my mind right now, but I would assume that for whatever charge that she would have had, maybe would have been to about lying to police, because that wasn't the story that she originally gave, right? Like, it had nothing to do with her dad and her knowing. She said she didn't know. She said the nanny stole her.
I am almost thinking about doing a full on every video that I watch. I'm thinking about doing a recording myself as I'm watching the video. Like, and I will just pretend that I'm a juror because I know nothing about the case.
I think I know almost
nothing about the case.
Okay.
I might do that. Just sit and watch hours and hours of this trial. And
I think that's a good idea. If you're going to watch it anyway, do it. And then I love this, because then we can regroup and see where it goes.
That's a good idea. Yeah, let's plan on that.
All right.
Her face does bother me. Like, I look at her and I'm just like, oh.
Her face bothers the freaking crap out of me too. You just want to punch it. She has such a punchable nose. The world's most hated
woman, right?
She is the world's most hated woman. She is. And it's like, and the narcissism, like, who comes, like, who wants to still talk about this? Like, who is like, I believe in my ability to lie, that I am still going to try to.
Well, she got away with it.
Convince everybody. I know. I mean, that probably helps with everything. But also, you know,
like, how many millions of dollars do that? If you think about it,
yeah.
She's almost unemployable. Her face is recognizable. There's nowhere on earth that she can go where somebody won't know who she is. So, like, everything from being...
Well, she was working for her lawyer. I don't know if she still is, but she was working for the lawyer for a long time. They had a weird, weird little relationship there.
Okay, don't tell me any more about that one. I want to... But, like, if she was paid a couple million dollars for that, which I know a production company would pay, she might be saying to herself, okay, I'm going to do this because I'm paid $3 million. That means I can spend $100,000 a year. Something like that.
This is true. But here, this is my other thing. Cause I'm just like, but again, I mean, like, your pride, your ego, your whatever you think you have, your ability to lie. I would be like, after all of these years, you're going to make the money anyways. They're going to pay you anyways. Why not tell the truth? It's not going to change the outcome. They can't do double jeopardy. You've already been proven not guilty. Tell the freaking truth, man. You already got paid.
That is true. Of course, if murderers would do that, then O.J. Simpson would tell us what really happened. There's a whole bunch of people.
He's another one who I just want to punch in the freaking face too.
he's spending a lot of time looking for Nicole's killer.
He's doing a really good job at that on the golf course.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, let's do that. let's regroup on that one. That might be something that I must be a glutton for punishment, because I think there's like 100 videos and they're all like an hour and a half hours long.
Yeah, you are. But you know, you can condense it also, right? Like, the pieces that you want to publish or whatever. But I mean, if you're going to watch it, my recommendation would be to just record all of that. juror number 13, Gavin Fish, G Money.
There you go. You're on the case. Yeah.
Court's in session.
Judge Sherilyn Dale and Juror 13 G-Money.
You're 13. Let's do this. Love G-Money. I love it. Okay, well, let's regroup then.
All right. Sounds good. Good to see you again.
Happy to me. So good to see you. Thanks, everybody, for listening, watching, whatever you're doing. Apologies for my video quality. I don't know what happened.
It's fine.
We'll figure it out.
Yeah. All right. Okay. Take care.
Love ya.
Love you, too. Bye.
Audible is the destination for thrilling audio entertainment. Allow your imagination to be piqued by stories that are brought to life through captivating sound design, eerie soundscapes, and dynamic performances. As an Audible member, you'll be able to keep your heart rate up month after month because you can choose one title a month to keep from the entire catalog, including the latest bestsellers and new releases. If you're in the mood for a shocking psychological thriller, check out None of This Is True by Lisa Jewell. Embrace brand new exclusive thrillers from best-selling authors who are guaranteed to keep you gripped. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500. That's audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500.